Hi folks, Jack Spirko here. Today you are listening to an episode of TSP Rewind. Commercial-free versions of past episodes, podcast blasts from the past. I put these up when I can't do a show due to professional commitments or rare vacations. These podcasts will appear in standard iTunes, Stitcher, and other feeds, but will be titled TSP Rewind episodes and numbered accordingly. And today, folks, we are rewinding back to May 17th, 2021. This was originally episode 2872. It was called The Big Lie, Just Follow the Rules. We're taught that as kids. Follow the rules and everything will be okay. The people that follow the rules do the best. Everybody that does what they're told to do works, you know, their life works out better than those that break the rules. Cheaters never win. And, well, that's not true, but What that little piece, that little jab there at the end added to that does is infer that if you do something differently than society says you're supposed to, that you're somehow wrong, you're somehow cheating. For instance, if you create a career in broadcasting without going to college and getting a broadcasting degree and going into radio and begging for an opportunity, if you just like start a podcast all by yourself, you're cheating. If you end up in some form of the field of engineering, but you don't have an engineering degree, but you have practical life experience, you have experience in fabrication and welding, etc., you've somehow cheated, and on it goes. And this is all because the people that run society, they want to control and manage everything. That's really what the obsession is. You could say it's about power and money, and for a very small number of people it is, but there's an awful lot of people involved in the self-policing monkeys of society, and there's a lot of them that are at, you know, higher levels that they don't really get rich, they don't really have a lot of power, but they're fully vested in this, and it's because there is this obsessive need in the mind of the bureaucrat. And when I say that, not necessarily the person who has the job, but the bureaucratic mind. The person who thinks it's fine that the government knows everything about you. The person that buys into the bullshit of, if you don't have anything to hide, you don't have anything to fear. That person, they want to regulate and control everything. I just read a survey. It was something like 69 or 70% of people with graduate degree, so master's degree, PhD, those types of advanced degrees, it's like 70% of them believe that we should be putting heavy rationing on things like food and energy to fight climate change. Well, how would you do that unless you knew exactly what everybody was buying, what everybody was doing? Why do you think that there's places now where like the counties want you to get an earth disturbance permit to plant a tree? I'm not making that up. They want to regulate and control everything. Why do you think they love grains? Why do you think they love grains? Why do you think they love corn and soy and wheat? Because you can take billions and billions of tons of it and cram them into silos and know exactly how much you have. It makes see, when you can make something easily divisible and durable and long-term storable and transportable, it makes it really easy to tax the shit out of it. There is an obsession with control of society. An absolute obsession. And that's why they love rule followers. Rule followers do what they're told to do when they're told to do it. So if they get a job in this particular sector, they're very easy to classify, and it's very easy to keep a well-run and ordered society, you know? The Nazis were really good at making sure the trains ran on time, too. I'm here to tell you today, as we flash back about 3 years in history here to this older episode, that actually the happiest people that I know are people that broke the rules most of their life. You know, as my friend David said, people that literally like rape the rules, right? That's what status jujitsu is. It's not necessarily breaking the law. No, notice that I didn't say just follow the law. That's not what I said at all. I said the lie is just follow the rules. See, most of the rules aren't laws. They're toothless rules. In other words, if you don't do them, and if it was good advice and you didn't take good advice, well, yeah, you have the negative consequence in your life, but you choose how you deal with it. Maybe you can actually turn it into an advantage. When you break the law, and there are laws we break all the time too, I'm sure every person listening to my voice right now, you have committed a violation of the law this week. Well, it's only Monday, so maybe not yet. But you will by the end of the week. It's called speeding. Do you ever drive 1 mile over the speed limit? You're breaking the law. Does anybody really care? No. When do they care? You know, 5, you might get away with. 10, you won't. Once you hit 10, you go past the cop 10 over. I guess there's some scenarios where the cop's tired, knows he's going to get one for 20, whatever. But in general, that's about it. Like, so people drive 5 miles over the speed limit all the time. Hell, there's places here, if you're not doing 10 over, you're going to get killed. Like, you get pulled over for not speeding fast enough before you get pulled over for speeding because it's just the way everybody drives. So there's all kinds of laws that people get away with violating all the time, but there's still the potential for you to have some sort of sanctioned penalty, a fine, a day in jail, a year in jail, a lifetime in jail, who knows? Those are all laws, and there's multiple types of laws, but in this respect, I'm talking of laws of man, laws of the state. But most of the rules that control people, they're not laws. If you don't go to college, even though every child should go to college, nobody does anything. Nobody comes and gets you, right, and puts you in jail. If you don't follow the rules of society within, you know, reason, literally nothing happens. In fact, in many instances, people do far better, right? They do far better. The people who control society fear the type of thinking that I'm talking about right now more than just about anything else in society. Because you know what else is following the rules? You need to go get your flu shot. You need to get your COVID shot. You need to eat grains and fruit and lots of sugar because we said so. See, the whole society has been built on you following the rules. The entire economy has been built on the majority following the rules. They don't care when a few fringe people break the rules. They don't care at all. But when those fringe people start to really excel at life, and others look at them and go, wait, maybe there's a better way to do this, just like the song, and start following them, that's when they start to worry. That's when they come at it with violent oppression. That's when they shout you down. That's when they censor you. That's when they say you're dangerous. Well, why am I dangerous? If you're so much smarter than me, right? Why do you need to silence me? Why do you need to delete my account? Why do you need to throttle my reach? Why do you need to do all that? If you actually have the right answer, why don't you just say Jack's wrong or whoever it is speaking is wrong and here's proof that they're wrong? That's not what they do. When they do fact check, they say, these special assholes over here said it's debunked. But they don't actually debate the issue, do they? No. So when someone stands up and says, you do not have to follow the rules, you can make your own way, they don't care until the others follow. That's when they care. It's almost like when we wrote that song, Greg Yoz and I, all those years ago, we had a reason for putting it that way. Anyway, with that in mind, let's go ahead and rewind back to what was originally episode 2872. The Big Lie, Just Follow the Rules, May 17, 2021. I will be back to regularly scheduled programming tomorrow. Until then, I do want to remind you about the Home Food Systems Backyard Cover Crop and Soils course. Please consider taking it. You can find it at homefoodsystems.com. And if you're not a member of the Member Support Brigade, consider becoming one. Hell, just that alone will get you $15 off the soils course. There's another course there to get you $5 off. That's $20 already. So check out the MSB. You can learn more at thesurvivalpodcast.com/members. With that, let's start digging into today's show. Start off, I wanted to give you a quote today. And when I found this quote, I was like, I can't believe I've never done this as a quote of the day before. I even searched the website for the last name Picasso. And while I did find that I'd mentioned Picasso a time or two over the 13 years we've been doing the show together, I had never quoted him with this quote. And it fits so perfect today. He said, learn the rules like a pro so you can break them like an artist. Learn the rules like a pro so you can break them like an artist. I thought it was a great intro to this show because I do want to be clear. In the same way that when I talk about agorism and how some of the things that we do as agorists, agorists, say it however you want to, Samuel Conklin, who created the term in the first place, really, as a way to describe the open libertarian market in modern society and coin the concept of being an agorist, said agorist. So I guess he gets to decide. So as an agorist, I say, like, don't do something just because it's illegal or just because you're not supposed to, right? Don't not do a business just because it's an above board business. In fact, it makes a lot of sense to run a legitimate business, right? So you need to understand the reason that rules exist, both the rules of man and the rules of nature. Let's use an example with this. A rule that people break all the time, but yet it usually works out that nothing bad happens. Not always, but usually. And people that end up where something bad happens, either it's a very minor thing or they really broke the rule stupidly because they didn't really understand it. Speeding. Speeding in an automobile, right? A car, a truck, whatever, is one of those rules that has two mechanisms of enforcement. And most rules either have the natural mechanism of enforcement. In other words, there's consequences to actions, even if nobody else is going to do anything about it. Or they have the two mechanisms of enforcement, and that is there is some people somewhere that will do something to you if you do the thing that they said you're not supposed to do. We call that in modern society a law. So I bet every single person listening to me right now, this very second, has at some point in your life not only exceeded a speed limit, but you knew you were doing it while you were doing it, and you chose to do it anyway. I mean, I think it would be disingenuous if I tried to make this point and said, if you've ever exceeded a speed limit ever, this applies to you. Because it's very possible that, because it happens all the time as well, right? Like, you're kind of driving along with traffic, you see a speed limit sign, you're like, it's 45 here? Really? And you look down, like, oh shit, I'm doing 60. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, you knew you were speeding and you chose to speed. You saw the sign, you looked down, it said 65, you're doing 74, you're like, I'm going to get away with this. Even if I do, it's not that big a deal, right? So we choose that. Where we get into trouble is when we don't understand the rule. Let's say you have a couple tickets already, and you, since you don't really know the laws in your state, you just think, if I get another ticket, I'll pay the ticket. But it turns out you have a state that has a point system on your license, and now that you've broken the rule yet a third or fourth time, however many it is, you end up with a serious consequence. You lose your driver's license for 6 months or a year. Because you didn't understand the rules, you couldn't make a good decision about breaking them. Let's look at another one. Let's say that you don't understand, even though you're driving a car and you should, how traction works. And there's a turn up ahead, and the speed limit on that turn is 35 miles an hour. You've been around that turn many times at exceeding 50 miles an hour. Nothing bad has ever happened, but today it has rained. The person that understands the rules, the natural mechanism of enforcement, is going to back off that turn a little bit because tires have less traction on wet roads. And even if you don't go off the road, you know that since you're coming around a turn in traffic, the other way is coming around a turn, you could come out of your lane and hit another vehicle. So because you understand the rules, you choose to obey them or limit or control the way by which you break the rule. Right? This makes perfect sense to everybody. We do this all the time with so many laws of man that actually have that legal mechanism of enforcement. Drugs is another example where there's both mechanisms of enforcement. And let's use a drug. Just to be clear, it's a drug I've never used and I wouldn't use because of the natural mechanism of enforcement. But a drug that has significant potential to become, you can become addicted to it. You can overdose on it, even kill yourself, make yourself very sick, cause all kinds of problems. Let's say something like heroin. Now, so people make a conscious decision to do heroin. They might even say because they understand the law, right? They know not to have more than a certain amount on them or something like that. So they mitigate what can happen to them if they get caught. However, if you don't understand what the drug does and you combine it, let's say, with another drug, where you used an amount that you would have not really, like, died from, you could die anyway. Because you have to understand the rules, and people make that decision all the time. You know, many of us have imbibed significantly with something like pot, and I don't even know what it would take to seriously physically harm yourself from an overdose of marijuana. But if we don't control when and how we use it, it can mess your life up. I mean, as much as I've said that pot is, you know, fairly physically harmless when used recreationally. That doesn't mean you can't so violate the laws of nature that you couldn't end up damaging your life. You certainly could. You could certainly end up on the wrong side of the law. Maybe you have a little bit too much and you get tried for trafficking, right, or intent to distribute versus just possession. So we have to understand most people in their lives at some point or another have made this decision with something or significant numbers of things. Many of us, especially those of us who grew up in rural communities and whatever, when we were teenagers, we'd go out and have beer parties, even though it was illegal for us to do. This also has two sides. We have what happens to us if we get caught by the police. Actually, this one has three sides, right? You get caught by the police, you get caught by your parents, right? Or you drink too much, you make yourself sick, you get in a car wreck. There's people that have ended, you know, destroyed their lives or actually even killed themselves with an overdose of alcohol. It's probably not likely to happen that somebody's going to have alcohol poisoning drinking beer. They can certainly get very, very drunk if you really go out of your way to do it. But I don't know that I've ever heard of a case of full-on alcohol poisoning from beer. Somebody's going to point out that it did happen, probably some very small person who really did a lot of drinking, but it's not typical. But I've seen it personally, what happens when somebody like decides they're going to drink 2/5 of cherry vodka. The odd thing to me is, we intrinsically all know this, but the place that people allow themselves to be most controlled, to me, appears to be rules that have no legal consequence and extensively limited natural consequences. These are rules like, well, you know, you have to do all your homework in school. Like, there's really not a lot that happens when you don't do your homework in school. And you can strategically learn the rules like a pro so you can break them like an artist. Here's an example from my own life. I would have classes that, in a lot of our classes, the teachers may, which I guess if you're me, you know, if you have all your students are like me, it would be a critical error. You tell me all the rules in the beginning. You tell me how much my homework counts for, how much my tests count for, how much my reports count for. And if it turns out that my tests count for a lot and my homework for a little, and if I can get all A's on my tests and do maybe half of my homework, I'm still going to get an A in your class. Guess what I'm doing? I'm doing half my homework. Why? Because I'm confident in my ability to master the material sufficiently to get A's on your tests. And I'm also going to pick and choose, and like the homework I'm going to do is the stuff that's not a lot of work, and the homework that I'm not going to do is the stuff that is a lot of work that I don't see any value in. Right? This is a calculated rule breaking. And it's also very similar to how many people succeed deeply in life. We do not, like, school is such a fake place. It's such a non-reality. There is no place where you're actually judged so critically on so many things that are so irrelevant to your life, nor are they really relevant to anybody's life. Whether or not you remember that somebody did something in some year, some place, now, there's the macro view of history, but when we get into questions like that, if you don't remember that, there's probably never going to be a time in your life where not knowing it is going to either cost you your life or somebody else's life. It's not going to prevent you from getting a paycheck. It's not going to prevent you from being a good father or mother or a good brother. It's just unnecessary. And that so much of what we learn in school, and this is just an example, is so irrelevant to our lives. And people say, well, you know, I think history is really interesting. Well, then it would be relevant to your life, and it would be relevant to my life. I love history. That's why I picked it as an example, because it's a place where, even though I'm saying it, I don't personally feel that way from a standpoint of it's not worth learning. But I can't, in good conscience, say it's really necessary for you to live a happy, productive, healthy, wealthy life. And people can say the whole thing about, you know, if we don't study history, we're doomed to repeat it. Trust me, I'm not looking for an ignorance of society, but, you know, the real lesson of history is nobody ever seems to learn a lesson from history. We had that quote recently. Like, taking that approach and making sure that kids learn these historical facts has not prevented us from having more wars. There are people have gone on to careers and professions that have probably helped us avoid wars or at least mitigate the consequences of war, and that information was probably part of the way that they were led to a point in place and time to where they could be in that position to be, so it benefited them, and maybe it benefited all of us that they learned it. But the people that were going to learn that and take that path were going to do it anyway. They were going to do it anyway. Whether Mrs. Johnson in fourth grade made them remember that in 1561 so-and-so did something, that person, if that fact had any kind of way that it connected together with a sequence of events that led them to a conclusion, they were going to know that anyway. They were going to uncover that in their journey of education anyway. And this is exactly what happens in life when we pursue careers. You go into an office, there's things that you need to do, there's things that you're going to have very serious consequences if you don't get done, there's things that you can let slide, and there's things that you can't let slide. And the way that we succeed in that world is we make those calculations, and if we get toward the end of the week and those things that are of less importance can be accomplished, we tend to do them, but we tend to figure out that we're going to do all these other things that are far more consequential and important first. And what we do with people in the real world when they take that approach is, I wouldn't even say we reward them, they get rewarded. They get rewarded. So we have this conditioning system that teaches the opposite approach. Everything is equally important. Everything requires your attention. Everything requires your time. Everything requires your respect. Everything is something you need to know so that you can use it in the future. And this, I'm not doing this to beat up on school today. I did that in my video this morning, if you want to hear that. I'm doing that to talk about the conditioning that we go through as children. We go through conditioning with this obedience training, which is mainly what it is. With not only is it obedience training, because I'm big on certain things when it comes to obedience, which leads to self-discipline, which leads to self-action that's best for self. So when my grandson gets out of a car in a parking lot where people drive like idiots, unless I see it, because now that he's been done so many times, most of the time it happens. But if I see the head looking down, picking up a tablet, you know, spacing out in a parking lot, what I say is head up, eyes out, right? Because that's critical, because you get hit by a car, you're dead or crippled. But that's done so that that person can engage with that behavior long term. Whereas so many of these other things that we treat as though they're equally important, that learning this mathematical formula is equal in importance to head up, eyes out, that learning, you know, covalent bonds is equivalent to learning to read. These are not true things. If one wants to go into chemistry, covalent and ionic bonds are really important. If one wants to go into the sale of computer hardware, they don't mean diddly freaking do. But either path is going to require a command of language, the ability to read, to write, to interpret, to understand, and to utilize rhetoric to teach or exchange ideas and information with other people. So why don't we teach our children to develop that hierarchy of importance based on their goals and their agendas, rather than this equivalency, this false equivalency fallacy? In fact, our entire system of raising children today, largely at home and in the education system, is an incredible giant false equivalency. There is no world in which every subject that you take in school is equal in its importance in your life. And you can't show me a single successful person anywhere where I can't immediately prove that to be untrue. Because we'll just take a look at what kids learn in, let's just say, high school. And we're going to find 20, 30 things that was very important in high school that do not apply to that person's life at all, no matter what they do. No matter what they do. We can also look at the fact that the people that succeed at the highest level in that world of rules and false equivalency are never people that change the world. The valedictorians historically end up being really exceptional mid-level employees. The person that graduates top of their class in high school generally never becomes a CEO. They just don't. I'm sorry, they don't, because it requires that very ability to sort and filter and determine importance, that the person that excels by getting, you know, A pluses in everything cannot do. Even if they were born with the ability, it's literally conditioned out of them because they buy into this rule set. And what this does is it creates a society that's very easy to control. And that's why we're talking about it today. Because what we end up conditioning people to believe, and even the people that don't fully buy into it, they tend to live mostly by it. So follow the rules and everything will be okay. Work hard, get good grades, get a good job, show up every day on time, do your job exactly the way you're told, you won't get fired. If you want to see the epitome of it, it is, and it's what's destroyed the American labor market, is the mindset of the union worker. And I've talked about this before. I don't hate unions as a thing in and of themselves. I hate what they've produced, which is the natural consequence of something that exceeds its need and continues past its useful life expectancy and then becomes subject to the iron law of bureaucracy, where the most important thing is the survival of the organization. It becomes an entity unto itself. The people that control the entity are the ones that make all the rules, and the people that actually do the work are the ones that are shit on. That's exactly what unions are today. So what the union worker of today does, get a good job, show up on time, do your job, work just hard enough to never get fired, and just hard enough that you'll probably get that next promotion up to a point, and then pull back so that you don't have to work really, really hard at that top level. Very few people even want those top level jobs. And I can tell you, again, this really isn't crapping on unions, because I've seen it in other fields, but the unions really bring it out, that you see this, well, we don't want to get done with this too quickly mentality. We're paid by the hour, for God's sakes. Where the person that is going to really achieve, that's going to really succeed, that's going to found their own company, that's going to invent the next great thing, is going to be incapable of staying stratified in that place. They won't be able to do it. They will be miserable. They might even do it for a time, but they're always scheming. They're always working on something else. They're always trying to do something new. And in every instance, if you were to pull 1,000 people who not claim to be, but are genuinely happy people, and 1,000 people who should be happy, but they're not, it's almost inevitable the group of happy people will be made up primarily of rule breakers, and the people that are unhappy will be rule followers. And it even manifests itself as jealousy. I've seen it. I've seen it in my own life where there are people, and they're not bad people, and they don't dislike me. But you can tell that there's an animosity because they're the person that went to school, they got good grades, they got a good job, they've been in their career for, you know, 20, 30 years. They've done everything that they're supposed to do, but they're unhappy. They're unhappy, and and the longer you stay unhappy, the more you become miserable. That seems obvious, but I think it escapes people. You know, I hear so many people say, you know, like someone young will tell them, well, I'm unhappy in my job. And they say, well, we're all unhappy in our jobs. That's a rule follower. And they've conditioned themselves to believe the rule is no one really wants their job. They need their job. And then they go along with that plan. And those are the people that usually end up without enough money for retirement, but they can scrape by. They're the ones that end up really, really worried about everything in retirement. And they spend their entire life never really being happy. They might even look okay from the outside. They have this internal, like, financial and lifestyle cancer, but they live through the chemo. But nobody wants to live through chemo. And that's how people look at their job. No one wants a job. You know, people want a job for money. They want a job maybe for prestige. They want a job to be able to buy things. But no one wants a job to have a job. If that's the case, if you really don't want a job, then shouldn't you be trying to figure out how to not have a job? But see, the problem with that is what? It breaks the rules. Now, there's a lot of different ways we can not have a job. That doesn't mean you have to be a bum. We could take the primitive approach, though. There are plenty of people that don't have a job that live very primitively. People all over the world that have no job, but they live, you know, kind of like modern hunter-gatherers. You can not have a job by working a job really, really well, making a lot of money, investing it, and retiring very early and no longer having a job, if that's the means to the end. But when people follow the rules, that's never what they do. Well, you put 10% of your money in your 401k and you work till you're 65 or 70. You have very little life left. That's what that leads to. Other ways you can not have a job is you can have a business. It's another way you cannot have a job. Another way you cannot have a job is you have a business that's so integrated into your life that it doesn't even feel like a business anymore. You just kind of, that's what you do. I think of people that I know that are, you know, they're fishing guides. To me, that's work. It's a job. But some of the fishing guides I know, it's really not. They're like, I get up every day. I have to take care of my fishing equipment and all like that and make sure the boat's maintained and everything. But if I didn't need money, I would do the same thing. I just wouldn't bring anybody with me, or I'd only bring friends with me or whatever. But I'd still go fishing all the time. That's another way that you... There's so... But like, instead of teaching people to sort in their minds this way, what I've had people push back at me when I've done like public speaking events on this type of thing is, but then who's going to invent the next antibiotic? You know? The same person that does it now. The people that truly excel all do this. They just determine that, well, with what I want, employment is the best path for me. You can look at so many things that we think of as rules. They sound like they make sense, and they don't make any sense at all. Here's an example. Never quit. Never quit. I mean, I know this audience, and I know there's a lot of individual sense of responsibility here. I know that. There's a lot of, you know, get up off your ass and take care of yourself and that mindset. A lot of military and law enforcement in this audience. A lot of people who've worked really hard to get where they are. And a lot of people who have not only military, but you know, airborne school, ranger school, SEAL school. I mean, we have some really amazing people in this audience. And those people are even more subject to the concept of never quit being a great rule. Okay, let's just, for the sake of argument, make it completely obvious how bad an idea never quit as a rule in of itself is. You decide that for some reason or another, you want to touch a frying pan for 30 seconds. You thought the frying pan was cool, but it turns out the frying pan had just come off the stove, it's blazing hot, and when you touch the pan, it begins to seriously burn you. Like smoke, skin sticking to it, that type of thing. How fast should you quit? Well, immediately. Right? You decide to go after somebody because you think they did this horrible thing and they deserve an ass beating. You've punched them in the face once, somebody yells to you, they didn't do it, and it's credible. How quick should you stop punching them in the face? Immediately. How many examples can you come up with that? With like that? Obviously, you should stop doing it. You're grating cheese. The cheese gets down to the point where you start grating your fingers. When should you quit? Probably one stroke before the first one that takes your knuckles off. But when you hit that first scrape, you not only should you quit, you do quit. Why? These things make you miserable. So if you're going to school to study a thing, and studying that very thing makes you miserable, and your justification for doing is, but I won't be miserable when I'm done. Well, if you're studying this thing, and this is your profession, like you go to college and you think, I'm going to be an architect, and you find out that studying architecture makes you miserable, there's a pretty good chance being an architect will make you even more miserable. But we get into the sunken cost fallacy. Well, I have so much of my time and my life into this. No, the time to quit doing a thing that makes you miserable, unless there's a very clear goal, advantage, and benefit at the end of the misery, is instantly. We should stop doing things that make us miserable as quickly as we possibly can. That is completely counter to everything that we teach people, but it's true. It doesn't mean being a quitter in the way that people use that with a derogatory term. But when I became unhappy in sales, I went to marketing. And I didn't go to marketing to stay in marketing. I went to marketing because I knew if I took marketing, coupled it with my sales knowledge, I would be able to figure out something to do for myself, and I would be incredibly successful at it. I didn't even know what it was yet. So I did marketing long enough to get really good at it, and then I decided to use my sales and marketing skills to market and sell myself. And I actually enjoyed sales, and I actually enjoyed marketing for a time until I got to the point where I could do the things that I was able to do as an employee in my sleep, and I knew that I could do more than they would let me do, so I quit. And if you tell somebody that much of a story about a person, they'll say, well, that sounded dumb to me. They had it made. But do you think my life is better today for having quit than it would be had I not quit? If you've listened to the show for any length of time. Of course it's better. If you followed what's happened to me in my life is better for it. I'm not saying I couldn't have had more money or more power. But what motivates me... This doesn't necessarily have to apply to you. What motivates me is neither money nor power. Power, I think, is something that I have almost no interest in. I love influence. I do not like power. Influence is the ability to get other people to do things because they believe that it's best for them to do them and to then be able to measure the results and decide whether they want to continue. Power is the ability to make somebody do a thing. Power is, if you don't do this thing, I will fire you. Power is, if you do this thing, I will reward you. That's power. Influence is, look at this thing. If this makes sense for you, you should pursue it. So I like influence. I have no interest in power. Money, I like money. I like money. But I don't like the money. I like the freedom that comes from having money. One of my favorite quotes was from a mentor a long, long time ago. Life's like a shit sandwich. The more bread you have, the less shit you have to eat. Right? You know? So to me, money is about if I make enough money, if I have enough cash flow, I can pretty much live the life that I want to live. And a lot of things that are supposedly rules will no longer apply to me. And that's not about privileged wealth, affluence, getting away with things. That is, well, no, I don't need a job. Well, why don't you need a job? Because I have money. And see, that works with people. It's like when you tell someone you don't need a job, they're like, well, yeah, I have a job. I gotta have a job. Yeah. Well, no, I have money. Well, how much money are we talking about? Enough money that you don't have to pay for my lifestyle. And I get to do the things I want to do. Okay. Grumble, grice, groan. And it is amazing to me how many people who watch you succeed in a life like that show animosity and jealousy. And not bad people, not petty people. They're really not, it manifests itself that way. What they really are is disappointed in themselves. They look at their life and say, it doesn't make sense to me. I did everything I was told to do, and I'm not happy. And this person over here, they cheated, you know, metaphorically speaking. They didn't go to school. They didn't work hard. They don't understand how much hard work you really did. But it didn't look hard because you loved it while you did it. And it seemed like you took all these risks, and it seemed with that much risk, you should get hurt. But somehow, it worked out. And it's because of that conditioning. Back to our quote, right? Learn the rules like a pro, so you can break them like an artist. And think about every person you can come up with that did something absolutely revolutionary. Let's go to the top level now. Let's go to people like Elon Musk, right? Who's not my favorite person, by the way, okay? But just look at creating something like a PayPal. How many reasons were there that that would never work? How many reasons? Like, think about it. People today just go, well, that's PayPal, whatever, man. You know, of course, that's how I made a billionaire. Now he's in all these other shit, and he's the richest man in the world. Let's back up. There is no PayPal. So what you want to do is you want to create a way for people to spend money. Oh, like a merchant account, like credit cards and stuff like that. Well, yeah, but not really. It won't really be that. People could actually just deposit money into it and send money to each other. Oh, so it's a way to send money to each other, like a bank. Well, yeah, but it's not a bank, so it's not going to be subject to the regulations and rules of banking. Okay. So this is like for Tom to send Bill money. Well, yeah, sure. That's one way it can be used. But the other thing is Bill could have a website, and then people could pay him with it using dollars, or even like he could be selling things in dollars and they could be paying him in euros and it'll all work. Well, credit cards do that already. Why would you do this? Because I have a better way. I have a way to make it more accessible to more people. Oh, the government will never let you. Enter an Elon Musk. You got a guy that says, there's no such thing as let me. There is, I want this thing to be a thing and I will create this thing, and every time I run into a roadblock, I'll run it. Whether I run it, whether I bribe the guy, the cop at the roadblock, whether I take a different route, whatever it is, I'll get past that when I get there. I'll do everything I can to be prepared for it, and then I'll adapt when that's not enough. No matter who you look at, every billionaire you know their name, that wasn't a billionaire when they were born, broke a shit ton of rules. A shit ton. And everybody that created a thing that didn't exist broke a shit ton of rules. It's the most valuable skill you can teach a person, and we spend the first 13 years of a person's education beating it out of them. Even when we go up to college, it continues for another 4, 6, depending on how long, years. Only the truly elite educational paths alter that. If you go to get a degree in engineering at MIT, they're going to teach you exactly what I'm teaching you now. Right? They're going to teach you, here's this thing that all your teachers don't know how to do. This is a problem we're trying to solve. Go ahead, figure it out. And only the elite of the elite, from an intelligence standpoint, will get through that process and graduate from a school like that. Most of our educational system, even our university system, just reinforces the concept of follow the rules, do what you're told, because of two reasons. One, if I'm an Elon Musk, if I'm an entrepreneur, if I'm a Jeff Bezos, I need the majority of my organization to be those people. I need to be able to say, do this thing, get it done this way. This is why we have employee manuals. This is why we have training procedures. I need a small portion of my workforce, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10%, to be the people who can do this at a much higher level and break rules and know how to get the employee to do what you want them to do outside the rules, but let them think they're still following the rules because you had the authority to tell them to do it. And I need about 1% to be the true entrepreneurial mindset, the true rule breakers that are smart enough not only to break the rules, but break them like an artist so nobody goes to jail or nobody blows up a building. And the problem is that I really do need about 1%. Very few of them are going to be content to stay with me. They're going to want to go do their own thing. If you could have an organization of 100, I'd say you really want 2 to 3 people like that. So it's 2 to 3%. And you want about 10% of the total, to be those people that can think outside the lines, but still mostly color inside them. And you want them to be able to just adapt instantly when those 2 to 3 say, do it. And you want everybody else to be a worker bee and follow exactly the way they were taught every time, because you can model your business for that. You can know your success rate in a call center that telemarkets warranties for automobiles if everybody reads the script exactly the way they're taught to read the script. No matter how shitty the result is, you know what the result is, and you can build a financial model to make that work. And the majority of our jobs in society, they're that. Which is why I say they do not generally require a university degree. Some that do still are. Like, there's engineering jobs that you're not asking a person to build a new thing. You're saying, here's the thing we want you to build. Make sure it doesn't break. source the parts, make sure the heat sinks are adequate in it, or things like that. So first of all, the people that run the show, the oligarchy, want obedient workers, in the words of George Carlin. But it's much more insidious than that, because we could have a society with a lot more people that know how to break rules like an artist. And we could be a lot further along. The real reason is the people that actually control society, the people that want to regulate and manage society, can't do this if you have even a significant percentage of society that thinks this way. This is why we have an oligarchy. It's what you do with those people. You say, all right, you know what? You can buy influence from me. I'm the one in charge. I'm the one that says the way things have to be. In fact, you can use me to create regulations that further your agenda, that squash your competition. But if you have, let's say, a society with 2 in 10 people who live by the mindset that I'm giving you today, how do you control them? Wouldn't you think, let's look at the pandemic. Everybody has to wear a mask, and 90% of people just comply. There's no world, especially once we were more than a few months into this, that anybody who looked at numbers, reality, science, reason, and logic would have just shut up and complied with that. So what do? You make it political, right? You use guilt, and you use guilt to enforce the rule that you really cannot enforce. You really can't enforce this. You have to make the monkeys throw shit at each other to enforce it. But you need the majority of monkeys, the vast majority of monkeys, to believe that it is morally right to follow a rule, even if there's no teeth in any law to enforce it. If you want a society where the majority of people, including those who are completely unqualified from pursuing the type of advanced degrees that we get, or even just university level work, to go do it anyway and put themselves in debt to do so, to create a Ponzi scheme that you can leverage off of, then you need people to believe the rule, every child should go to college. Right? If you want people to always do what they're told unquestioningly, then you need the vast majority believe that it is virtuous to do so. We call it teaching citizenship. We shouldn't be teaching citizenship. If citizenship, whatever that means to whoever's teaching it, is truly making the right, virtuous choices that are in the best interest of the person making them and the people that they care about, we should have no need to teach citizenship. We should only need to teach people how to think and how to figure things out, because then that's where they would go. That's where they would end up. The only reason you teach people to do a thing and obey a thing unquestionably is so that they won't question it. Doesn't that make sense? Isn't that the most, when it's put that way, isn't it like the most obvious thing in the world? So how do you do this? You learn the rules, and then you challenge all of them in multiple ways. One way we challenge a rule is, what really happens if I break this rule? Because there's times where you're like, you know what? Think I'm going to follow that rule. Well, the rule is, you shouldn't jump off that building over there. Well, since that's a 10-story building, my basic limited understanding of human anatomy and my fairly reasonable understanding of what pavement's like, I'm pretty sure that's a good rule. Law or not, I'm not jumping off that building. So we examine the rule. Like, what happens if I break this rule? Or, well, you know, if I go into that bank vault that they left open, grab a bag of cash and run down the street with it, like a politician, they're going to run me down, beat my ass, and throw me in prison with people who are going to rape me. So one's a natural consequence. The other is more of an enforced law with teeth by the state. But in both instances, the results for me are bad. I'm going to follow those rules, right? I also have an ethical consideration in the second one, right? I mean, honestly, think if I want to kill myself, the whole argument that it's unethical can be true for the people I leave behind. But in the end, if I want to kill myself, I want to kill myself, I'm going to kill myself. Right? But jumping off a building when there's a crowd below me is probably unethical. But when it comes down to it, it's a very clear, there's no line that taking your money from you against your will through theft is wrong. So there's another reason for that rule. It really is the wrong thing to do. And the personal moral code of most people, I think, aligns with that. That it's not right to take a thing from another person. It really isn't. So there's that part of the rule that we determine. So we're looking at the natural consequence, right? We're looking at the man-made consequence, and we're looking at the personal moral implication of making the decision. Reasonable. And that alone, for most people, is going to keep them from doing things they really shouldn't do. People that are, and you'll say, well, people go to prison all the time, and people do shit they shouldn't do. Yes, and those people are, like, the system that has this blind allegiance to the rules has not prevented that at all. What it has done is seriously limit, basically hobble, massive amounts of humanity that could be doing so much more, either for humanity as a whole or just for themselves and for their families. So the next thing I'm going to look at is, well, if I break the rule, what happens that's beneficial? Let's say there's nothing that is either illegal and has a serious consequence, so it could be something like a minor consequence, a fine or something, right? Slap on the hand. And there's nothing that has a serious consequence from a standpoint of physicality, a natural consequence. It's not jumping off a building. I'm not going to splat and die. And there's nothing about it that I think is really ethically or morally wrong. It's just that everybody expects me to do this, and everybody expects that most people should do this. And I look at it and go, by not doing this, here's the upside. And if the upside outweighs the downside, I should probably break the rule. This sounds so obvious, and some of you are listening and going, well, duh. So why don't we do it? And the reason is it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous to people that want to control society. There's a belief that most people are either wolves, sheep, sheepdogs. I can understand how we can group people like that. But human beings are human beings. We're not sheep. We're not dogs. We're not wolves. And it also infers that the wolf is inherently evil. Wolves in general leave people alone. They kill to feed their family, just like hunters do. Sheep, if we actually are talking about real sheep, there's nothing wrong with a sheep being a sheep. It's supposed to be a sheep. When a human behaves like a sheep, that's where the problem lies. Humans are so much more layered than those three layers. They really are. And for everybody you would classify that way, there's probably somebody that would classify them differently. The soldier who fights for the other side, how do you think they're viewed by their people? They're the sheepdog. To you, they're the wolf. The person that's willing to go out, risk their life, and die for their people see them as a sheepdog. Since they're on the other side of the line, we see them as the wolf. And we send our sheepdogs. Are we sending two sheepdogs after each other? Are we sending two wolves after each other? Is it really in the best interest of the sheep that the conflict occur in the first place? Do either of the parties have any desire to harm the sheep on the other side? Probably not. But boy, what we need is a foam finger waving, and we're number one, and back the boys, right? You know, we got to support we can't support the troops if we don't support their mission, or that mindset, that mindless, mind-numbing bullshit. This is why you're not taught this. This is why you are not only not taught to think this way, you're programmed to reject this mindset from the day you show up to kindergarten, and now they want your kids at 4 year old for 4 years of age for pre-K to start this indoctrinating and programming earlier. It doesn't have to be that way. And I would just say, look around at the people that you find to have the best life. Not necessarily the most money, but the best life. Like, you look at that person, you go, boy, I think I could trade places with them. I really do. Because a lot of people you might look at and go, well, they have a lot of money, they have a nice car, they have a nice house. Yeah, I think I could trade places with them. But if you really examine their life, would you want to? Think about the people who you really would, if you could, want to step into their life and live the way that they live. I'm going to tell you the majority of them, if not all of them, are rule breakers. They're rule breakers. And that's what we need to be as a society. I will even put, I'll end with this. If when I talk about, we don't need to be teaching citizenship, trying to convince people that the minutia level of historical knowledge is essential for their lives. When I talk about the fact that the guy on the other side of the battlefield is the sheepdog to his people, if all, any of those things, because you're so patriotic as an American, bother you, how did America become America? Was it because our founders followed the rules? They played it all by the book? Or they did everything that they were supposed to do? Or did they look at things and say, we're unhappy with the way things are. Following the rules is not going to get us what we want. So we're going to commit an act of insurrection and treason against the crown. And then we're going to do everything necessary to execute our battle plan and win. If it takes setting shit on fire, we're going to do that. When we're going to fight the war, since the enemy has superior numbers and weaponry, we're going to run away. Isn't that breaking the rules? Did the revolutionaries not break the rules of warfare? Did they refuse to come out and stand line and line, column and column, and just shoot at each other until one side had more people die than the other and one side gave up? The primary reason we won the American Revolution is we ran away. And I'm sure we were labeled as cowards. But we won. Broke all the rules. We broke all the rules. And we needed a semblance of order. So we ended up first with the Articles of Confederation and later with the Constitution. And I believe that we legitimately, as a society, did the best we could to install a system of order into a society that at that point was kind of like, well, what do? Who do we listen to? Who's in charge? You have to think about it. Even having been here for hundreds of years at that point, there was a certain understanding that, like, there was a king, and a king, we need one, or wouldn't have one. So some new form of order was established. And there was also this fear that if we didn't have that, that the freedom we had attained would be taken back. We'd have to be able to raise an army. We'd have to be able to have a navy. We'd have to be able to guard our homeland. So that's what we did. But we got there by breaking the rules over and over and over throughout history. Every major pull toward liberty broke the rules. The people that have done the most in the world of, like, permaculture break the rules. Jeff Lawton talks about how permaculture is sedition. Ron Finley is a guerrilla gardener in Los Angeles that has done more for his community than any community program that followed the rules ever did. Brad Lancaster in Arizona has created an entire new neighborhood that used to be kind of a slum by breaking the rules, by taking a concrete saw and cutting a hole strategically in a curb. Broke the rules, changed the calculus, made a real difference. None of these people were stupid about how they did it. The founders weren't stupid about how they broke the rules. The founders were not stupid in their act of treason. They were calculating, they were cold, and they were smart. Ron Finley did not run around planting guerrilla gardens outside the chief of police house. He did it where nobody really cared. And when they tore it out, he just put it back. When Brad Lancaster started cutting holes in the curbs for water harvesting, he did it kind of when everybody was in church on Sunday. And they did like one at a time. So they weren't out there running a concrete saw, which is very loud and obnoxious, for hours. What's that noise? Oh, it's gone now. Pfft, whatever. Got other things to do. This is how you build the life you want. This is how you design your life. It's not about breaking rules to break rules for the sake of breaking rules. It's about figuring out where I want to be and how do I get there. And if something says I'm not allowed to do that, how do I do it anyway? Do I go straight through it? Do I run the roadblock? Do I crawl under the wall? Do I throw a ladder over it? Do I blow a hole in it? Do I turn around and go the other direction and find a different way to do it? How do I enact my status jujitsu? Just think about it. Just think about how hard a society that thinks this way would be to control. You understand why what I'm doing right now in a very real way is seditious. Educating people that they can make their own decisions in this world we live in, which is marching toward tyranny, is an act of sedition. And I do it with pride. I do it with joy, because I trust that the people who hear this and act on it will do so with the intent to do good. And the people that will act to do evil act anyway. All that is necessary for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. And in doing nothing, see, everybody uses that as a way to create obedience to the state, actually, right? When it's a completely seditious statement. Doing nothing is not literally doing nothing. It's not laying on the ground like a slug, only burning calories to respirate and occasionally wake up and eat and go back to it. To do nothing, in the context of that quote, is to obey, to follow the rules, to do what you're told, unquestionably. That is the good man doing nothing. That is the good man doing nothing. At times in history, it is the path that leads to full totalitarianism. But most of the time, it is just the path to individual serfdom. To growing old, to living on Social Security, to always wishing you had done more, accomplished more, and never seeing the real cause of your failure was not that you didn't try hard enough, that you didn't work hard enough, but that you did exactly what you were told, exactly the way you were told to do it, unquestionably. It is literally the path to serfdom, and I don't want it for you. With that, hope you guys enjoyed my first episode back. I don't know what we're going to be doing tomorrow. I do know I have a great interview with you with a real audience favorite on Wednesday. Won't tell you who it is, but a really cool guy. And we will continue through this week together. I do not have an item of the day for you guys today. I don't. I'm just still trying to dig out from under the hole that happens when I go away for this long and decouple like this. But I will remind you, you can always support the show by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com, and you can always support the show by becoming a member. Go to thesurvivalpodcast.com, click on members to learn more about it there, and if you use the discounts that you get as a member, they will more than pay for your membership. With that, let's do our song of the day today. This is by Willie Nelson, Yesterday's Wine, and while it wasn't planned out this way, it sure works out for today's show really well. This is a really cool song by Willie. I think it was released in like 2011 or something like that, so it's kind of newer for Willie Nelson. Guy's been around forever. And it really does, it's talking about aging. The concept in the song is like his future self is asking him about his life. And they're having a discussion about his life. And we think of wine as something that ages well, right? Older is better in the world of wine. If you actually know much about wine, you'll know that wine peaks, and everything after that is a descent. That's how wine works. Some wines peak at 12 years. Some wines peak at 40. Some wines might even peak at 100. Most red wines peak at about 6 to 12 years. Most whites, 2 to 4. Some even younger. Much like people. We peak. And the biggest mistake we can make is to think that our peak is still ahead of us when we've already had it. Or to think our peak is behind us when we still have ability to make a difference going forward. There are times I listen to somebody or I look at somebody and see where they're at in life and think, wow, they've accomplished so much. And I realize they're like 32 years old. And even with all of the good things in my life, I think, well, what have you done? Like, and you start to realize at some point in your life, like, I've found what makes me happy, or I've found my ceiling. I don't think finding the thing that makes you happy, finding the place in life that gives you the things that you love, that makes you want to get up every day, and not thinking you need more, is bad. But I think convincing yourself that you've done that is an excuse for not getting there. It's really dangerous. And here's the thing. I said this in my video today. I think to be truly happy, we have to have something to look forward to. As we're rising to that peak, that thing we look forward to can be achievement. It can be making more money. It can be career advancement. It can be all of those things if that's really what we want. But at some point, we have to realize that our whole life can't be about the pursuit of something outside of ourselves. And we do have to find a place of happiness. And what is mediocre to somebody else is exceptional to another, and that's okay. We have no right to judge ourselves or to judge other people based on our level of success and say, well, since I did more, they're not good enough. Nor should we look at somebody else and say, since they did more, I'm not good enough. But even when we found the place, like, I don't want to build my business any bigger. I don't want another promotion. I want to just spend the rest of my time doing these. We still need something to look forward to. And if you want to know, the person that puts the gun in their own mouth blows the back of their head off. The person that's decided there's nothing to look forward to. That this moment, no matter how bad as it is, it's as good as it's going to be. That's all. When you take away the ability to look forward to something, people become miserable. What this song is about, it's about becoming that. Yesterday's wine. Wine that not only has peaked, but becomes flavorless in time. There's nothing left to look forward to with that bottle. It's up to you. It's so up to you to determine how to make tomorrow worth looking forward to. Whether it's hugging a grandchild, picking up a fishing rod early in the morning and going out and fishing, taking a walk in a garden, enjoying tea, spending time with someone you love. No one can do it for you. I can no more look forward to a thing for you than I can watch the sunrise on your behalf. It's up to you. You can continue to age like fine wine, or you can become yesterday's. And a key to doing the first, to continuing to age like fine wine, is knowing when, how, and where to break the rules. With that's been Jack Spirko with another episode of the Survival Podcast.
Miracles appear in the strangest of places. Fancy meeting you here. The last time I saw you was just out of Houston. Sit down, let me buy you a beer. Your presence is welcome with me and my friend here. This is a hangout of mine. We come here quite often and listen to music, partaking of yesterday's wine. Yesterday's wine, I'm yesterday's wine. Aging with time, like yesterday's wine. Yesterday's wine, we're yesterday's wine. Aging with time, like yesterday's wine. You give the appearance of one widely traveled. I'll bet you've seen things in your time. So sit down beside me and tell me your story. If you think you'll like yesterday's wine. Yesterday's wine, we're yesterday's wine. Aging with time, like yesterday's wine. Yesterday's wine, well, yesterday's wine. Aging with time, like yesterday's wine. Yesterday's wine. Yesterday's wine. Well, yesterday's wine. We're aging with time, like yesterday's wine.